Hello everyone, Mexa here again, and I'm joined by both Greytone and Grisham. In today's podcast, we're going to be discussing handling real-world sensitive themes through a fantasy lens. And let me explain this just a little bit. So obviously, unless you're living under a rock, you know there's a lot of things going on. From in the U.S., from upcoming election to COVID virus to social injustice. Now, we as gamers usually escape a lot of that because most gamers like to jump into a fantasy-themed game and fight magical dragons. But for those of us who like a little bit more out of our games, sometimes we like very good plot-driven stories. So what I wanted to discuss was about how would you add some of these real world issues and put them in a game, not to necessarily offend your players, but just really see it play out through a fantasy, hopefully fantasy safe environment. One example I'm going to give, and I'm going to always be using this particular character or NPC as an example, is a kobold named Runty. Now, you probably heard about him in previous podcasts, but Runty was a kobold that actually took over Greytone's stable business. One of the things about Runty is that I'm personally, from my background and my past, I've actually found unions to be very favorable. And so I'm pro-union. A lot of people don't like unions. And so, you know, sometimes I'm thinking like, one way or the other, I think they serve a purpose. So one of the things about Runty was that what he actually did was unionize Greytome's workers. That's how he was able to overtake Greytome and basically shut Greytome out, because he offered them more money and he formed a union. This is just one example of putting in something from the real world into a fantasy lens, which I think makes for a richer story. But before I continue to pontificate, I'm going to turn it over to both Greytone and Grisham to get some of their initial thoughts about this subject matter.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Grisham here.
I think it is a slippery slope with it, because it's obviously, you know, you may want to, one way to deal with and explore some options of what's happening in the real world is going to be, how do we interpret this in various entertainment media? And it's going to include role playing. But I think it is a delicate subject. And I've seen it played out in a couple different ways in games that I've been in. And I have my own kind of way of handling that type of topic. If it's a game, especially if it's set in the modern world, how do you handle that? So, but it is something I'm pretty sensitive to.
In addition to that, I would like to point out that it is something that we as GMs need to be cognizant of. Especially in a hobby that is becoming more open and diverse, because while this hobby is becoming more open and diverse, we have to make sure that we make it open and available to each and everyone. We don't want to close off anyone from the joy that we get the chance to explore, but still touching on those themes might actually make for good storytelling. So while doing so, we have to make sure that we're cognizant of how we handle the materials so that they remain true, but we make sure that we provide a place where everyone can come to the table and enjoy.
I definitely agree, because I think it's something where it may be something you want to have a conversation with your players especially in, I think most of the experience I've had with this is going to be in games that are set in the modern world. Most recently, a few years back, a Marvel Superheroes game that was being run by a good friend, and that game was set very much in the real world. In that case, he dealt with a situation with school shootings where the players were the Avengers and how they were responding to that. I felt it was something he wanted to explore. It says, how would superheroes deal with a situation where you can't really, comic books and things like that are written a lot of times, you know, the Avengers or the X-Men are fighting some grand threat to the world. But, you know, you do want to ground that in some point, because we are existing in the real world. He chose a much more realistic take on it, where we were dealing with actual things were happening in the real world. It was happening in the news, and the Avengers were responding to that specifically and then elaborating on it. Personally, I felt it was probably getting a little too close to the real world. I personally kind of run those themes as, this is a situation, this is played out, and you're responding to something similar to that, leaving out the actual real individuals in the real world, and taking that context and putting it into a scenario where the players would have to deal with that. It was a different running style, because the way he was running was like, well, I probably wouldn't have done that as specifically where I take the heroes and put them into this. Comic books dealt with this during World War II, where you'll see a lot of comic book covers during that period of time, showing things like Captain America punching Hitler. But the actual stories that were being run during those periods of time didn't really deal with the events of World War II, because, you know, you didn't have the X-Men or Captain America who could just show up and defeat Hitler. Wonder Woman couldn't show up. Superman couldn't just show up and end it, because that could be written in a comic book that way. But then in the real world, you were still dealing with that. So
more so looking at was looking at it from, again, saying from a fantasy lens. So let's go back to something that we're all comfortable with. Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder. Those are, you know, those for the most part aren't real world. However, we can have real world sensitive themes come in there. So, for example, just going back into the past, when I first started playing Dungeons and Dragons, second edition, second edition is what I first got into it. When I was playing it, I fell in love with the paladin class. I thought, wow, this is really cool. This is what I want. So that was actually my first character that I rolled up. I thought, okay, a paladin is really cool. And so when I was playing and I started my character, the first thing I thought was that, you know, my character is kind of a representation of me. So I just went ahead and made my character and was having a good time playing the game. And so it wasn't until maybe a few weeks down the line, someone asked me what was the ethnicity of my character. And so I thought, well, he was black. You know, it just was a matter of fact to me. And they were like, well, paladins can't be black.
What? I'm sorry.
Yes, exactly.
So literally told you that?
Paladins can't be black. And I was like, what? Wait a minute. Why? And I'm like, well, because they're not. They're European Americanish type characters. And so my response, keep in mind, I'm a new player to the game. My response is that dragons can fly overhead. Elves can frolic in the forest.
Yeah.
But a paladin cannot be black. And that was my first tense where I looked at it differently, that there are different things in games. And sometimes, now, obviously, fast forward to where we are now, you can pull over the Pathfinder book as well as Dungeons & Dragons 5e, and you see a variety of characters of color. But back then, it was a different it was a different lens. It was, for whatever reason, you know, you just, a black paladin was just taboo.
I believe that that was more stuck in the minds of that particular player, because there's nothing, even in the second edition write-up, that is indicative of that. I've played played D&D and its incarnations. I've played Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, 2nd edition, 3 and 3.5, 4th edition, and am currently enjoying 5th edition and Pathfinder. With that in mind, I think that was the lens that that player had at the time. But it does bring to a point the fact that this was an instance in which one of your fellow players was not keeping the game open to other players. And for that, I apologize that you ever experienced it, and I hope that you never experience anything like that in game ever again. And I hope that that we help to make a gaming society where there is more inclusion and not less.
Yeah, we think that that person's opinion really is the minority view now, especially that it's not ethnicity. There's no reason ethnicity would ever prohibit someone from playing any type of class or particular type of character that they want. I think we have a much more open view of it. I think the Dungeons & Dragons community and just the role-playing community as a whole, not to say that there aren't certain individuals, but that as a whole, it is a more inclusive environment. Now, there is a lot of talk on various social media aspects that there's still some individuals that would not really interpret this as being an open thing, or it's somehow a more diverse community is somehow going to negatively impact this hobby and gaming in general. And nothing could be further from the truth. A more diverse population of people playing it from different lifestyles and just looking at the game from a different perspective and a different lens, I think is only going to make things better as a whole. But I definitely apologize for that. It's just activated. I know in writing my own games, it's just adding a more diverse amount of characters. That's been something I've been cognizant of and looking at things at other ways, and that not everything is going to look the way I look, and break away from that. Because yeah, a lot of fantasy was kind of whitewashed for a large period of time. So it's something we've got to address and say, yeah, you know what, we're going to change that. We're going to be better than we were before with this hobby. And you know, so I try to be inclusive and accepting of all these different views.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I appreciate both of you guys apologizing. You, neither one of you had to apologize for anything, but I appreciate it. And I just view it as, you know, at the time, people were very closed-minded. And getting right back on topic was that what I was looking at was that the fact that a lot of these things that are going on now, I just feel like you can't necessarily... We are a culmination of our environment and what's going on. So some of that I feel like will seep into the stories. And how can we tell a good story without necessarily offending, but actually providing a fun environment to solve a problem or even to just start a discussion? Not necessarily being heavy, but, you know, for example, I go back to Runty. My whole thing was that, you know, how did trials work back then during medieval times? What was the justice system like? Because in some games I play, you know, a paladin could be the one who just cast down the judgment. How would that work? So when I did the whole Runty scene, I thought, well, I'll do a little board and then I'll see whether or not the players wanted to actually participate and speak up or speak against the person who was being accused. And so in my mind, that was kind of a way that, you know, to me that seemed like a fair judicial system. And I wanted to see how the players interacted with that. So like I said, I just think that with everything that's going on, how can you not help but to slowly pull some of that stuff in? And another case in point I want to bring in is that right now, the whole COVID that's going on, I am thinking like a madman as to how could I bring some type of contagion into my game? How would I make that work? I know both of you are players in my game.
I think that it is a brilliant idea. And I actually approve of it. As I stated, I've had the honor of playing so many different editions of D&D. This concept was a lot more prevalent in the older editions of the game. There were charts for disease and ailments, and it is moved away from in more recent editions. And I think that those throwbacks are brilliant and are very important for the game, because let's face it, in the settings where one would play a game like D&D, it would not be surprising for a disease to, if not wipe out an entire community, hits enough members of the community that everyone else in the area left. I'm surprised that we don't come across more games where you enter into a town and find it completely abandoned, except for the individuals who have been victim of a disease. I think those are brilliant ideas, and they definitely need to be pursued in games. I was cringing because I happened to be in your game.
There's a lot of historical context for it that gets glossed over, I think, in some fantasy where it's, you know, the case of a pandemic like the Black Death or the 1918 influenza outbreak. You know, there's historical precedents that these things happen. Now one could argue, well, you know, it's Dungeons & Dragons, there's magics and you know, there's a spell, cure disease, and you know, you can wipe that out. For heroes at a certain level, yes, that may not be
exactly
threat, but for the common person who's not going to have access to that priest of a certain level, so it's, you know, that's not necessarily going to be an easy solution. You know, it's like, hey, how would this play out? You get to the village and there's a disease brew. How would you handle that type of situation?
So let me switch it, still staying on topic, but let me switch it just a little bit. What would be the pitfall or the traps or things that you say, no, don't do this, or you have to be very careful when you're doing this? What do you foresee? What do either you foresee if you try to pull in some of these real world themes into your game?
So, as I stated, I've played multiple editions, and when one of my favorite settings in second edition was the Dark Sun setting. In Dark Sun, there was the prevalence of slavery was rampant. And at least in Dark Sun, the slavery that happened had nothing to do with race or ethnicity. It was a matter of individuals that were powerful being able to force the entire populace into slave labor. But when you're touching on issues when it comes on the magnitude of slavery, or when you're touching on issues when it comes to removing the ability to say no versus sexual advances, those are issues that have to be handled with utmost care. As a person of color, I can attest to the fact that while some gamers would be willing to deal with the issues that are brought forth in Dark Sun, there are quite a few gamers who would have a legitimate beef with that, and you need to make sure that you are handling these things with respect. And if you're going to be handling subject matters of this nature, you need to have conversations with your players beforehand. because you don't know what someone else has been through. You might think you know another person, but you don't know what someone else has been through, and you don't know what things can will trigger them. And it can turn what would be a group, an enjoyable experience for an entire group, into a traumatic experience for some of the people at your table. And as we've all stated, this is our hobby. This is something that we enjoy. We don't partake in this to cause other individuals pain. We don't partake in this to hurt people. We partake in this in order to decompress and to enjoy and to enjoy ourselves. And so if you're going to deal with critical issues, you have to deal with them respectfully. And it is wise to, in my opinion, it is very wise to touch base with your players if you're going to touch off on topics that could end up being triggers.
I think that would be, yeah, that's a critical point, is that you have a discussion with the group, and it's like, is this what you want to explore? Is this, you know, where are the boundaries, I think, really, with that story? And I really think it's also that no player gets put in a position where their character has to do something that the player wouldn't necessarily agree with. You not force someone to do something, or, like you said, an interaction which could cause them pain, because you don't know where they're coming from. It's definitely something you have to have a conversation with people about. What's the purpose of this interaction? What's is this part of the story? And then what's the motivation behind doing this? That needs to be kind of hashed out and, I think, explained. If you're going to explore that, there needs to be a reason why. You definitely don't want to introduce something that is going to be edgy just for the fact of being edgy, because, as you said, you don't know where someone's coming from. I think that's really hit on the point, that you have this conversation about what you're planning to do.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, just linking onto what both of you said, is that if those of you who actually have a Pathfinder book, second edition, on page 486, they actually give the Pathfinder baseline, which I always view as a good rule of thumb on what, you know, is objectionable content. And as Grisham hit on certain things, I just want to read just a little snippet of it, if I may. But one of the things they say is that this is just dealing with the actual player characters, that player characters should never perform these acts. Torture, rape, non-consensual sexual contact or sexual threats, harm to children, including sexual abuse, owning slaves or profiting from slave, reprehensible use of mind control magic, which I think are all really good baselines, in that, you know, that's something players shouldn't be doing. Because I know in a previous podcast, Grisham, you talked about running villainous party, but for the most part, most games are supposed to be games of heroic or good players doing good things. So, you know, I think a lot of players will kind of blur the line on the torture, but at least most of the players that I play with won't touch any of the other ones that I have read. That torture one is a little, you know, some people blur the line on that one a little bit.
Well, I think you could look at like Game of Thrones type things, where there were some very brutal things that happened in that. It's not stuff that necessarily is going to translate into a role-playing game session. And I think that series, though, because I've had friends of mine who are fantasy fans who have told me flat out, like, yeah, I couldn't watch it. It was too graphic with the violence that was portrayed in that series. And they just said, you know what, it just wasn't for me. I let it go.
And I definitely understand that point of view.
Absolutely. You know, especially it seemed like in the earlier seasons, it seemed a little more to be prevalent. And there was a lot of controversy about that. Like, what is this portraying? And the actors that were there, you know, explaining what these roles were. But I can definitely see where that's not for everyone. And you are playing, really my take, and it's been brought up in other podcasts, that I kind of run a golden age of heroes type thing, that there's good versus evil, and good is ultimately going to win in the end. That's and it is really how I kind of run my games, that, you know, this is, players are heroes. They may be anti-heroes in some case, but they're still heroes. There are certain things they are never going to do. There are certain things where they wouldn't do, not because they follow code, but because those things are evil. That is bad. And if those things ever do happen, that happens off screen with kind of villains. But even my villains, they're not villainous in that regard, at least not directly. They're more evil people that want to accomplish some goal, but I think the graphic level, I personally try to keep it to a PG-13 type thing, because I have a wide range of players that are in there, and you know, I want this to be a family friendly type of environment, especially if sometimes we're playing and there are young kids around, or there are teenagers that are involved in the game. So I try to be mindful of what content that's happening. Other players are like, well, you know, we're dealing with real world issues. I want to deal with these things and address these issues. And, you know, there's an argument to be made for that. But I think it's really something you do have to have a conversation with your players about what type of campaign you want to run. You know, there are other GMs that do run more adult-themed games. It's not particularly the way I want to run a role-playing game, but
I would just add to that, not even necessarily just more adult theme, because you know, you are the golden age, the goodies guys. I like to consider myself like sort of shades of gray, but not getting too dark. But what I wanted to touch on was that one of the in the current adventure that I'm running, both Grisham and Greytone through, was that I had been having a discussion since back in my college days with my parents about living wills, about, you know, please let me know what your thoughts are. You know, I know we all want to live forever, but at some point, you know, we have to check out. So, you know, there's a huge resistance to do that. And, you know, I can respect that. But one of the things I wanted to do was address that in the game. What happens when an adventurer falls? What happens to his body? What happens to his belongings? What type of burial do they do? And this is something that I thought bringing in the game, because usually, you know, most players think their characters are going to live forever and nothing's going to ever do it unless the DM is killing them, just totally killing them. But it was actually it caused an interesting debate. Well, don't take my word for it. Let's just ask Grisham and Greytone. Do you think it caused an interesting debate about what to do with the bodies of fallen comrades?
And you know what? Actually, I was about to starting on this, but I think that this is Greytone's place, because it's centered around his character's ethics. So I'll let Greytone take this one.
Yeah, in that case, I was playing a Crumb Greytone, a half-orc barbarian, spirit barbarian. And one of the primary things with that character is that you not disrespect the dead. Fighting undead is okay, but not disrespect the dead. It can have impacts on that. So, you know, abilities that that character has can be directly impacted from just a panic storyline, but then also the connection that character has to the afterlife. It did really raise up a lot of questions, because it's like, well, what do you want to have happen if something were to fall? Well, you know, this particular character has a particular item that his mother gave him, and he would want that to be returned to her. You know, but who's going to execute that? Has he made that known to his comrades that he's just recently met? You know, we're in a group that's just starting out, and we haven't known each other a long time. We don't have a huge history. We've all come from different places. We came together. And certain characters in that group are going to be closer to you than others. So it was a difficult thing, because it was the mission that started the whole conversation was go and find these remains. Well, those remains are already buried. Digging them up and bringing them back, is that disturbing content. Maybe it's better off left alone. It's like your loved one fell in battle. They are out there. They were buried, but digging this back up and bringing it here, is that the right thing to do? And that led to that conversation that, well, we want their remains buried here at home. And then leading the existential crisis that, this character is far from home. His family is a long way away. And what happens if Krum does fall in battle? Who's going to notify his family? How does that happen? And who does he trust to carry that out?
Has Krum made those arrangements?
He hasn't at this point. Those are questions that he's struggling with right now, what to happen, because his whole background is he doesn't want to cause problems for his family, which is why he left. He's a half-orc. There's a whole storyline revolves around that. And he's trying to, and it's not even necessarily the right decision. It's the decision he's made. And he hasn't made those arrangements yet. And that's kind of haunting, like, what happens? His mother's still very much alive, very much cares for him, and there's a family support there, but he feels through various aspects of his storyline that he can't stay there. He needed to leave that comfort and be out here. So it's something the character's struggling with. And as a player, I'm trying to figure out, okay, how would that be dealt with? How would this character kind of work with it? It's getting into a deeper theme than I've delved in a lot of other. There's a ton of different gray tones. I think the last time I counted, there's 9 different variations of this character. Not all barbarians, they're different classes, mostly wizards. But this one is the one where I've delved most into what's really going on in his heart with his motivations. And I think as a player, I've matured more where it's tackling, okay, what is he going to do if this falls? The other characters aren't really struggling with those ideas. It hasn't come up. But Krum Greytome, my half-orc barbarian, is definitely trying to figure out where his place is and what happens if he dies. Who's going to fill that? So, and it led to an interesting and not only in-game, but it was also some things that had to be resolved out of game, where we requested, okay, write out how your character's dealing with this. What struggles are they going through? And it led to, as I was writing that little caption out, that it really started to delve more deeply into what makes the character tick and how am I going to respond to that? Having dealt with family members who have passed away, both of my parents, unfortunately, have passed on, and my personal feelings and how I dealt with that in my life, dealing with that loss and having to deal with the ramifications of that, notifying family members and having difficulty tracking some family members down to relay this news. So that whole conversation stirred some emotion in me and some personal effects. And it's just like, okay, how does the character deal with that? And a little bit of that processing, that pain that I went through that character, which never really discusses with anybody, but kind of helped me kind of come to terms with some things and some decisions and kind of look at it from a different lens of stuff that was painful for me. Grissom brings up the background. It didn't really come up in the game, but that was in the forefront of it. And I think probably part of the initial knee-jerk reaction to that environment was some of that experience coming out to the surface and then trying to deal with some of that personal pain that I went through. It was as a way to kind of process through it. It's kind of work through some things, was helpful with the environment that we were able to do that in. I've known Nex and Grissom most of my life, so it's like our friendship spans decades, and we've been through a lot as friends, happy times, sad times, and these are individuals that I've been blessed with to have them along that life journey. He'll turn to, in difficult times, there's a shoulder to lean on. And that brought up that game was, and that content really helped deal with some real world issues. And it was, I haven't resolved it with the character because it hasn't completely resolved in me, so it's not necessarily going to resolve in the character. So I'm probably writing more into it than is necessary for the story, but it's me kind of processing my own pain and trauma over the loss of my parents, and then how would this character deal with that? And so it's there was some therapeutic value to it. I don't know if it's necessarily a good word for it, or if I'm explaining this very well, for anyone who might be listening who's been through a difficult time, difficult environment. I think this is something we've touched on briefly, that there is some good value to a healthy role-playing group where you can get together with friends and explore some of these things, and it may be able to help you process some pain. And I think it's one of the great things about this hobby is that we can get together and kind of share in a support. I'm very, very fortunate to be in a very supportive group. They're all people I know, and it's a good constructive environment that I can open up about things, and it's going to be received well. I don't fear about talking about any of you. I don't have any hesitation with that, because I know all of you would be supportive. But it was something that did come up in that game. I had to deal with something that got a little deeper than I think it was imagined that some of the other players in the game saw, because they may not have gone through that same experience that I did in life. And then, so when that context came up, it was, okay, how does the character deal with it? How am I as the player dealing with it? And how is this kind of helping me kind of work through some of those things?
Thank you, Gray Tom, for sharing that. And the feeling is mutual. I love you guys.
Yes, the feeling is mutual. And I personally want to say, Gray Tom, I respect you immensely. And the fact that you are, it's one thing to share that with a gaming group, but to go into it as deeply as you did right now shows how strong of a person that you are. And while you may not have finished dealing with all these issues yourself, I know that you are strong enough to do so. Because I personally could not have opened myself up as much as you did right now to the whole internet. And so I have nothing but respect for that.
Thank you.
That having been said, you're wrong. No, I'm just kidding. No. I want to say
we had that happen one time where we were talking about alignment. If you want some interesting things, it just kind of like we've done other podcasts as a group, and we did one on alignments, and we recorded one with one of our other GMs, Ray, and he's like, "Yeah, about that, you're all wrong," and we're like, "What?" They were absolutely silent. What? Because we were talking about alignments, and so it just thank you for that. So.
No, I knew that you had taken it to a deep place, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to get a little bit out of that, if you so chose. But I do want to add something to what you said, because the scenario that Nexus gave us was a beautiful one, not for its complexity. It was a very simple scenario, but he knew that it would force a discussion amongst the players who would agree. That he knew by the way that we had built our characters, there were going to be opposing points of view. And you represented your point of view on it so very eloquently just a little while ago. And other players who had a completely separate point of view by how they had built their characters and what they had stated was the nature of their characters, those viewpoints were by their very nature going to be opposed to yours. But because people were so into their character, they could not hear each other. The scenario that Nexus presented made the characters have to stop and listen to each other. And that is something that definitely is part of our shared hobby, is you cannot do a role-playing game by yourself. It is the interactions of all the individuals involved that help to build the world that you're in. And by presenting that, it made individuals look at a point of view that was not theirs and realize that this point of view has value. I may not agree with the point of view, but it made the players acknowledge the value of another person's point of view, which is something that is so essential to our world today.
Well said, Grisham.
No, I didn't say it. The scenario that you made did it. So no, it was a well-crafted scenario, because at the end of it, my character, who was not as invested as the two positions, was of the mind like, look, stop. You at least acknowledge this person's, do you at least acknowledge where this person is coming from? Because you can't have a conversation till you do. And it made players stop and actually think about the other person's point of view. And if we did that in our society today, while my views are still right, if we did that more in our society today, I think that that we'd have a more open society, because we'd at least be able to listen to each other.
Agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only other thing I just want to echo on is something that you both brought up about, you know, that type of balance when dealing with certain scenarios like this or certain themes, is that, at least for me as a DM, my goal is never to make people, you know, I don't necessarily want to make people uncomfortable or, you know, really dislike or dread the game. I'm okay if the topic is a little uncomfortable discussing it out, but I don't want anyone dreading the game, because I view my players as some of the best players and open-minded, and I view, like, if they were a society, how would they handle these typical types of questions? What are their problem-solving ability? Because I learned from it as well. But, you know, when I say uncomfortable, like how they said, you know, torture, rape, mind control, that's something, though, that I would just not do. That's off-screen stuff for the baddest of bad guys. But I really want people to think about it, because I do feel that, and I hope I'm doing my job as a GM, is that you actually care about your characters, that you're invested in your characters, and that, you know, your characters are memorable and they're woven into the storyline, and the scenarios I throw at you are based on how your character will perceive that. Because at the end of the day, when the campaign is over with, I want people to be able to look back and say, yeah, I love that campaign. It was good. I mean, we touched on a wide array of things. And that's my real goal, because some of these real life situations, I wonder how would my friends handle it if they were in it in a fantasy lens. But again, I never ever want it to be where someone is so uncomfortable that they even dread playing the game. So I definitely do try to be mindful of that.
I think we need to be respectful of the tone. And we're all adults, you know, it's the types of games we run now are a little different than what we ran. And the three of us have been playing since we were teenagers. The content of games that we've run has matured as we've matured. There are certain things where, like, yeah, I agree. I don't incorporate context of rape or mind control or, you know, serious evil in any of my games. It's absolutely handled off screen. That's for the baddest of bads, like you said. The players are in opposition of that. You know, it's they're the heroes. I'm running Curse of Strahd with a group. And we talked a lot about, I don't do well with the horror genre. In an earlier podcast, talk about, like, one of the biggest mistakes or problems I ran into a game was when I was trying to run World of Darkness. It's just not a genre I'm really able to get my head wrapped around and play it well. I do more of the heroic type of games. And even with Curse of Strahd, it's the players are the light in the darkness. I'm putting my own take on Curse of Strahd. There are some people that have, you know, discussed online where they take very dark interpretations of that game. And I guess that's the story that they want to play. Their players are comfortable with that. Okay, you can do that. It's not the way I'm running it, though. But I definitely don't want anyone to ever feel uncomfortable coming to sit down at the table and question what's being done to the characters. I would never do something to someone's character that would not be explicitly, you know, permitted by them. I would never have a character do something when they're not present that they're opposed to. You know, especially if it was something that was a moral question or something harmful. I would never do that because I have too much respect for the people that are playing my game, and knowing that just because they're not there, I'm not going to make their character do something that it wouldn't normally do. Because it is ultimately, this is something we do for entertainment. We do it because we enjoy doing this, and we can tackle tough themes, but you know, it needs to be done respectfully. It needs to be done carefully. And I think it really needs to be done with the community, the group, the party, I should say, as a whole, kind of coming together and saying, okay, do we want to explore this theme? You know, our current group that I'm running the homebrew game is a half elf, a dragonborn, a tiefling. We've got a gnome and a half drow. There are no human characters in that game. How does that fantasy realm really kind of play out with that? A lot of tieflings in D&D 5e are kind of shunned by society. Half elves don't really find a welcoming environment in either world. I've touched somewhat on those. A half drow. The drow are kind of born wherever they go. I've touched on that to a certain extent, but I haven't made the major issues around the story. You know, we could delve into that more if the players wanted to, but I don't know if we necessarily need to. I don't want to do it just to do it. It has to have some value to the story, something that would be happening, and that would be done with the party's permission. Is kind of explained like, hey, we want to explore this. I agree. I don't want anyone to come to the table and be offended by something that I do. You know, it's because it's team building. Now I get to play with a bunch of people I've known for a long time. I get really kind of a little self-conscious about it if there's other people around that I don't know when I'm playing Dungeons and Dragons. I've always had that.
I think we all get like that. And I think The fact that we are expressing these views, I think we are being mindful of the players. But I just want to share one more thing with everyone, just a scenario. And this is actually in Art of Magnus or Ray's game, and Greytone is a part of this game as well. I actually had one of those issues where it made me really think about the whole, it just made me think about a lot of issues in a fantasy game, and I was really, really impressed with Art of Magnus, and I don't think he necessarily did it intentionally, but it was still something that just really made me think. So we were coming across a settlement that had been overrun by ogres, and they actually killed off these elite brand of rangers, and they were keeping some of them hostage. So as we were going back and reclaiming and taking the town, we came across some of the ogres inside, and of course we slew them. Then we came across some baby ogres. And when I say baby ogres, they were about our size, but you could tell they were actually children. And so my character, which is a wood elf druid, did not want to kill the children. Greytone, who was actually a mage, did not want to kill the children. So me and him made a stand and said, no, we're not going to kill them. We're going to capture them, take them to the local city, and let them deal with them. Now, the other characters in the party, which was a paladin and a ranger, they were saying, we're going to kill these creatures because they're abominations. Doesn't matter that they're kids. So it caused a kind of a argument. And then there was a person in the middle who just stayed out of the conversation altogether. And so what wound up happening is that as we were still making our stand, Greytome and I, the paladin just decides to decapitate the children. And the DM actually was explaining, like, the child was, I mean, he was actually being very...
They weren't taking any violent action against us. They were scared more
than anything. Yeah, I mean, the DM was really conveying how frightened the children were of the paladin, and the paladin just basically decapitated him.
Yeah, and that happened in another room. Because we're having this conversation, the paladin was watching over them. We're having this debate over what to do, and we said, no, we need to return to the city. The law sort this out, or we could figure out something else that we could do for them. Because maybe we could impact how they grow up. Nexon and I saw it as an opportunity to maybe change the discourse of our belief with ogres. And then the rest of the party is like, no, these are creatures. They're not human. They're animalistic. And we did see some pretty bad things that the older ogres had done to the residents of the town. But we said, well, they weren't a part of that. And the paladin.
And so, like I said, they were actually children that he killed. And so what really got me the thinking after that was that, yeah, I didn't want to kill baby or children ogre, but the DM, Arta Magnus, said, so if they would have went to the town, what would have happened? They would either execute them or they would have been slaves. Is that what you wanted? And then my wife, who actually is not a gamer, I was telling her the scenario, and she was like, well, is that what you wanted? Would you have want the townsfolks to make them into slaves? And it really got me thinking about that because, you know, and that's where it's a really memorable moment because I think my character behaved how he would because he's actually a balance in nature. But at the same point in time, you know, this is what happens when you have characters of different background can't come to an agreement. And pretty much like Grey Tome said, the paladin made the decision for us that he was just going to decapitate the kids. But it's really thought provoking, and it just really got me thinking, like replaying that scenario over. Is there anything I could have did? Is there any solution I could have did that maybe, like how Grey Tome said, changed the course of these baby ogres or children ogres, where they weren't necessarily slaves, but they weren't necessarily evil. I mean, I admit everybody can't be Runty, but it should be a goal to strive. To actually, you know,
find a way to increase the discourse instead of just shutting it down. And depending upon what happens in that campaign going forth, perhaps there will be an opportunity to, as your characters have more influence on the world around them. Right now, because I've heard this story from you and Grey Tome before, and it sounds like that when this occurred, it was fairly early on in your characters' careers. But I wonder if the same conversation could be had once your characters were 10th level, 11th level, once you have more influence on the world around you. So the question is, the moral choice of that, would you have had more influence on the community to say, hey, as individuals who've done this X, Y, and Z for this community, we now ask this community to make a change? Because that's echoing what's going on in our world right now, as more people and thus more powers is saying to our joint community, this is wrong. It needs to change. So.
Well, that was the stance we kind of took in the game where we drew a line where, you know, I'm playing a wizard. And the question was like, well, you're a wizard. This isn't really, you know, something you're really concerned with. You know, you're about the pursuit of knowledge and power. And I'm like, yeah, but this character also, this Grey Tome, has a line that they're not going to cross. And this particular one, yeah, he has this knowledge and power, and he knows that there are laws and rules and beliefs that aren't, in his definition, meet or good. He's chaotic good. He did, you know, it's, and I can really play in that, you know, he kind of looks at the world around him and says, you know, hey, there are some things that are clearly right and wrong. Yeah, there are some shady gray areas that we have to operate in. But in this case, it's like, no, these ogres are no threat to me. They're no threat to any of us. And what are you going to do with them? Well, not kill them now. That's clear. And that's, we're discussing it. And that kind of set up some friction with that, the group's paladin and my wizard, where it's like, well, because he, and several times in the game, the paladin has come up like, well, it's the law of the land. The law is what is going to be enforced. And I'm like, well, the law may not be right. What if the law is wrong? What if the people making the laws were wrong? Why are we going to follow that? You know, the king says X, Y, Z. Well, what if I don't agree with the king? Who says the king's all the time right? And, you know, that's the context that the character approaches it. So, and Dex and I tried to persuade our party to do that. And we weren't happy. We walked out. When we found out what happened, we're like, you know what? We're done with all of you. We walked out and we're like, we're done. We did notice between ourselves that nobody wanted to get very far away from us, though, because of the power between the two characters. You know, they want that lightning bolt and fireball and that, you know, druid shape power that comes with it, because we're heavy hitters in the group. We can deal out a lot of damage. They didn't want us getting too far from them, so they would kind of keep moving along with where we went. They kind of followed along with us. And we're like, yeah, look at this. You know, it's you know, you do that, but then, you know, the minute we walk out, you're like, oh, well, we need that firepower, you know, because if we do run into more ogres or some other challenge there, orcs, whatever monsters it may be that we run into, well, we want you guys along with us, because, yeah, it's, you know, and we thought it was, it struck me that it's like, yeah, you know, your character doesn't want to agree with me, but it also recognizes that it doesn't want to get too far away, you know? So it's just, it's, and it was something we were not happy with the way the party handled.
And that speaks volumes, because it shows that the the influence that you had even beyond the actions that were taken.
Yeah, that game, the druid and the wizard, it's like, well, you know, it's just they are technically our goals, because that one deals with factions, things like that, are ultimate goals are not in alignment, but these two characters and their approach to the world, it's really making the decision. And the wizards made decisions that, you know, well, what's in pursuit of the faction's needs and what's best for the world around them, that faction really is secondary. You know, yeah, there could be ramifications to my character for it. And it's kind of like, well, bring it on. I was walking this world before this group came in and was like, well, hey, you know, you can do these things. And you know, ideally, I think I will be there after that group has kind of faded away. So it's just,
and the wizard likes to hide behind the druid.
Absolutely. Whenever he turns into the giant black bear, I will talk so much smack behind him. You know, just like, oh, you want to come back here and say that? Didn't think so. Firebolt, didn't get back behind the giant bear. Like, come back out, firebolt, get back behind the bear, you know. So it's just it's a great tactic, you know, it works well. So
thank you. So let me share my final thoughts, and then I'm going to give it to Grey Tome and Grisham to share their final thoughts. I just want to go back to that they both have made excellent points, that you have to be mindful of your players, you have to be mindful of the type of scenario that you're running. But I think that if you take the time and use great care, it will lead to some really good discussions and good character building and character interactions. It can be done right, but it just, you have to make sure that you take care in doing it. And that would be the main thing that I would have as a takeaway. And I'll turn it over to Grisham and Greytone for their final thoughts.
So, the final thing that I would like to add, as a GM, remember this one thing, and I say it to myself as well. Even if you think that you've handled something tactfully, even if you think that you've held restraint, if someone at your table, if someone that you respect enough to bring to your game table says, hey, this is too much, stop and listen, because this is not your game, GM. The game belongs to everyone. You cannot GM by yourself. You cannot play by yourself. And so remember that even if you think that you've handled something well, you are not that other person. You need to take their feelings into account and be mindful. And if necessary, swallow your pride and change course.
Amen to that.
Definitely, I think really think respect is, and I think everything that we've talked about here is based on the assumption that you're in a group that is respectful of people's feelings in something like in this regard. Especially, I think as a DM, you never do anything to a character that you know that the character is not explicitly allowing, or you don't go around and do something to that character that you know that player doesn't agree with. Fundamentally, that there's something wrong with that decision that you're making. That you players control what they want to do, and they can say no, I'm not comfortable with that, and you've got to be respectful of that. And you have to be open to, you know, there's different opinions on things, and you know, it's just you've got to be mindful of what your players are feeling, what their experiences are. You know, and it's just, and I think as players, it's just like, yeah, if you're in an environment, in a group where obviously this group is not open-minded about, you know, the content, they're not being receptive to that, maybe time to walk away from that group. You know, it just, it's, you know, you don't need to feel obligated to play in someone's game. And I think DMs really need to be mindful of the content that they have, because this is an open, diverse community, and it needs to be, I think. I think it only benefits from being an open and diverse community where everyone has, you know, a seat at the table, where they can sit there comfortably, and that there is going to be content that's going to say, hey, no, we're not going to address those things. It's not part of this game. I think next, reading off that little caption in the Pathfinder book is dead on the mark. You know, this is, if content is, you know, like wrong, you can't say, well, it's open. Everyone's got an opinion. Not necessarily. That touched on some things that were absolutely that are just not to really, don't have a place in the heroic and encompassing and diverse and accepting an open environment.
Well said. Well, everyone, thank you. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I did recording it. And I would like to definitely thank both Grisham and Greytome for their time and their insight.
You are very welcome.
It was my pleasure. I learned things.
And if you have any comments, please post them in the comment section below. And take care, everyone. Look forward to the next podcast.
Be safe and take care, everyone.